Having been given just a 3-day notice that I was going to preach this morning, I should have been grateful that I was not informed this morning when I fell out of bed, though as you soon will determine for yourselves, the end result will probably be the same. In fact, what could be more appropriate for the opening service of the academic year chapel service than the pericope of the expulsion of the unclean spirit? We are forced by the highest principles of charity to put the best construction on the situation and assume that the pericope was chosen without any personal intent. Perhaps it came from a series put together by some German monks. By the time February rolls around, with its midwinter depressions and doldrums, you may find the pericope of the unclean spirit is exactly what you are looking for, and you will have no difficulty in applying it, especially to others. Traditionally, the church has seen fit to ignore the Gospel of Mark, as it would be difficult to find any of the early church fathers or Reformation leaders who commented on it or even used it in any way at all. Many of us feel that this was the right decision, and there is, in our catalog, no course on Mark. The gospel a person or a church body likes tells us something about that church body or that person. Mark happens to be a favorite with very few. Lutherans follow Luther in making John a canon unto itself and are more likely to quote the so-called gospel in a nutshell, that God so loved the world more than any other passage. A latent piety or pietism makes many Lutherans feel very much at home in Luke, with his concentration on personal faith. Their religious life finds expression in such passages as Mary keeping the Christmas memories in her heart and pondering them. Or they like the words of the Emmaus disciples, "Did not our hearts burn within us as he walked with us on the way?" These are the people who feel that they've never been to church unless they've had the opportunity to clear their throats of a few lumps. And with a little luck, they will wipe away a few tears before the benediction. It's the ultimate sacramental say assigned to them that they have been saved. Though they won't admit it, many, if not most, Lutheran preachers pattern themselves after Matthew, who sets forth Jesus surrounded by Old Testament passages. They are forever looking for Bible passages to back up what they are saying. And when that fails, they run to the confessions. In the hour of desperate need, places what Luther says is always right on their desks. They have the truth, but they have difficulty speaking that truth out of the conviction of their own hearts. The truth is always something which is said by someone else who is more important than they are, and not what they are themselves willing to confess or defend. Then there comes that time when the preacher has to follow the example of Mark, who is not only an evangelist because he has written a gospel, but his gospel is more than theology. It's more than just history or narrative. Mark is the preacher, and his gospel is preaching. And like a good preacher, he flashes one episode after another from the life of Jesus before the eyes of our mind. And he, more than anyone else, makes us feel that we are part of the action of the life and death of Jesus, and that action in which God was redeeming the world. It is a favorite gospel with the deaf, who are forced to visualize what they cannot hear. Part of the American tradition, the Protestant tradition, that is that nearly anyone can and should preach. Some students who have come to this seminary have already found themselves preaching and have no other purpose in coming here than to be certified by the institutionalized church. Preaching is too important to be given to those with self-professed convictions, but whose knowledge of the Scriptures and, more importantly, the gospel is still not fully formed, or worse yet, malformed. Seminary education means a destruction of false ideas, a reconstruction of partial truth, And in the end, a total rebuilding of the student so that he can be part of that church which St. Paul calls the pillar and the foundation of the truth. Yes, you must become a student and a scholar of the Bible and the confession. Yes, you soon must begin to think of yourselves as models of Christ, not only in morality and sobriety, but in patience and in suffering. For even the pagans and the hypocrites are moral, but in you the suffering and the persecution of Jesus becomes manifest in the world today. You are the ones who are being entrusted with the apostolic teachings, so that through you the teachings may be given to future generations still unborn. And in this way, the apostolic doctrine will be preserved, and the apostolic mission of world salvation will be perpetuated, and we can have the assurance of maintaining an apostolic church here on earth. But having said all this, the student, from the very first time that he makes application to the seminary and sets foot on this campus, has to look upon himself as a preacher. The motto of this seminary is taken from 2 Timothy 2:4, preach the word. And the students of this seminary, in its nearly 140-year history, have never failed to obey the command of this imperative. One of the most sacred and equally terrifying moments in your seminary career, generally before the end of the second year, will be your first sermon, either before your colleagues or before the people of God. And suddenly you, as the preacher, become the link between heaven and earth. The God who spoke through the prophets and has spoken a final word in His Son, Jesus Christ, will be speaking the word about Jesus and from Jesus on your lips. This is the word that closes the gates of hell and opens the portals of heaven. Now, this cannot be 20 minutes of entertainment, though that would be preferable to muted, mumbled boredom. Your hearers have not come to learn about the great things that God has done in you in the preaching style of the Protestants. A well-documented dissertation on the value of Christianity and its inherent truthfulness and cohesiveness will turn us off. Your hearers will respond that you preach like the scribes. You must become like the evangelist St. Mark and preach Jesus. And after you have preached, the people must say that they have seen and heard Jesus in what you have said. You must preach with knowledge, but equally important, you must preach with conviction. After you preach, the people must share in Mark's assessment of Jesus that you have preached with authority, and not as the scribes who are forever telling the people what the authorities believe, but never tell us what they themselves believe. A sermon like this one is always dangerous because it might turn several hundred potentially sound Lutheran pastors into a mob of street corner preaching fanatics. But preaching is important, not in rousing the people to action, but in bringing Christ into the midst of the congregation. At this moment, your spirits should not be dampened. But it is true that seminary is a long and frequently grueling experience. And for the new students, you must wait nearly 4 years to become preachers. You have already perhaps found out that the seminary means a lot of little problems that soon develop into bigger ones. The children of the first-year students would really rather be back in the small farm towns of Iowa. And the children of the returning vicars were just getting used to life in the larger congregations of the Missouri Synod. You took Greek this summer, but for many of you, it's still Greek. Your wife really doesn't want to go back to work to support you, and I can't blame her. And if I were a 3-year-old, I would not look forward to a 40-hour week at the daycare center. And to make matters worse, the folks back home are still questioning your sanity because you gave up a starting salary of $22,000 in order to live beneath the government's officially established poverty line. But as you head off for the Paris Island experience of your theological career, it is not a bad idea to hear a few trumpets blowing in the future and to see a few banners unfurled in the heavens. The trumpets do blow and the flags will fly when you preach Jesus. Mark does not tell us whether anyone believed when Jesus preached in the synagogue. All he says is that they were astonished in the way in which he conducted himself. A demon or an unclean spirit, however, heard the preaching of Jesus. He understood it, and he recognized that Jesus was the Holy One of God. And he prayed Jesus not to bring the final judgment upon him. Several years ago, because of the book and subsequent motion picture, The Exorcist, a satanic craze hit the nation. The neurotic and the unstable were seeing demons everywhere and in everyone. Happily or unhappily, the craze has dissipated, and the general population have returned to their therapists and to the enjoyment of wallowing in their own shallow feelings. But what remains true is that Satan and his evil band still wander on this earth, possessing and controlling the hearts of men. These demons will hear your preaching of the gospel, and they will be convicted. In your preaching, the kingdom of God is still coming. And in this preaching, all the devils in hell are hearing their death warrants read to them again, as they were first read by Jesus, God's Son, in the synagogue at Capernaum. Mark's gospel first attacked the satanic citadel in the corruption of first century Rome, with its open polytheism and the murderous, adulterous, incestuous lives of such emperors as Nero and Caligula. And the general population was content to have their stomachs fed and amuse themselves with the games of the Colosseum. Against the might of Rome stood the church with its comparatively few members, and whose only trophies were the martyred, venerable remains of the blessed apostles Peter and Paul. But they were armed with the preaching of Jesus and of his cross. The lives of the martyred Christians proved to be victorious, and the religion of pagan Rome was overcome. Mark's gospel brought Jesus into Rome and conquered it, just as Jesus had done in Capernaum. You also are going to be preachers in a satanically controlled world, no less pagan than the one in Rome of St. Mark. I have never been over concerned with the missions of the Malcolm Muggeridges of our world, who prophesy and preach against the paganization of the Western world. The gospel succeeded in morally destitute Corinth and not among the learned philosophical Athenians. The gospel failed in the moral purity of Jerusalem, and it conquered in corrupt Rome. In the midst of the corruption, that church became a light among the nations. And in a morally corrupt world, the lines are more clearly drawn, and the gray areas soon become distinct. Today you are being called to fight in the cosmic battle between God and Satan again. This battle between God and Satan, heaven and hell, and Jesus and the unclean spirits finds its focal point in you who are becoming preachers of the gospel. But before you get adorned for the parade of victory, there are a few intermediate steps. There will be disappointments. There will be drudgery. There will be suffering, persecution, and deprivations. But would you really want it any other way? You want to be like Jesus, who first suffered before he entered into his glory. Before victory, there is war and battle. And this battle means that you become preachers of the word.